As a songwriter and musician, Roseanne Cash has released 14 albums, had 11 number one singles, a Grammy, and 10 Grammy nominations. As a writer, she's published short stories, a children's book, and many articles and essays. Roseanne Cash is also a busy mother of five and, of course, the daughter of the legendary Johnny Cash. She was on our show in August to discuss her latest book, composed memoir, in which she reflects upon growing up with a famous father, her entry into the world of music, and her evolution as an artist. And we thought that we would re-air that conversation for you today. We began by playing this song called Dreams Are Not My Home, and I asked Roseanne Cash, couldn't that also have been the title of your book?
Do you know, I actually thought about that. That's so funny you would bring it up, but my editor ixnayed it.
Too complicated?
Too complicated, exactly.
Roseanne Cash, composed.
Right.
That's good.
Simpler.
Of all the mediums that you have worked in, is there one in which you feel most comfortable?
Language, the written word, you know, either as a songwriter, prose writer, it's kind of like the same water to me, you know, different pool, same water. But that's where I feel most comfortable, writing.
So one day, does a song lyric become the equivalent of writing a poem one day and then you go off and write a short story the next?
Well, some themes keep recurring, and I've written them out in songs, and then they wouldn't leave me alone, and I wrote them out in prose. Some scene or theme or experience. But sometimes I find myself led to either medium, you know, like a lyric will come with a melody, so you'll naturally go there. Although there is melody in prose as well.
Well, there have been some writers recently who published books with CDs attached as a kind of a soundtrack because they thought of that music while they were writing the book.
I love that notion. It's a very interesting idea. Or to say, listen to Philip Glass while you read this book. Yeah,
as you would if you saw the film adaptation.
Exactly.
In the book, you write, "For me, art is more trustworthy, is a more trustworthy expression of God than religion." Is the act of creating a spiritual experience for you?
I think it's the ultimate spiritual experience. I mean, I don't really believe in a personified God. God to me is art and music and that creative experience, wherever that comes from.
Well, obviously, in the earliest times of when people were becoming humans, they made that connection. That's why they were painting on the cave walls.
Exactly. And that is, it's such a pure impulse that connects us to some pure source, I find. I mean, that sounds very mystical and everything, but it's kind of rudimentary. It's kind of essential to who we are.
I get the sense that at times you've been somewhat ambivalent about your career. You're
right.
It took me a long time to grow into an ambition for what I had already committed myself to doing, but I knew I could be good at if I put my mind to it.
Mm-hmm.
Were you wary about working in the same profession as your father?
Certainly. You know, my upbringing, I saw that fame and success and being a musician meant you were traveling a lot, your marriage fell apart, and you got addicted to drugs. It didn't sound like a very, you know, wise career choice.
Well, how aware were you when you were a kid of all of those things happening? Because kids are often don't get only a small part of the complete story.
Yeah. I mean, I think we intuited more than we actually knew. You know, when someone is an addict and an active addiction, a child, you didn't really understand that, but something's wrong. And certainly I knew my parents were not happy. But, you know, going back to my ambivalence, that was kind of an early imprint. And then later on, I had children myself, and I thought, how am I going to balance this? I don't want to leave my kids all the time.
There's also the problem of having a parent who's really, really famous.
Yeah.
There are people who are going to say, well, she wouldn't have even gotten a recording career if her father wasn't so-and-so. Or I know that early in his career, Jacob Dylan wouldn't talk much about his father.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it's for the same reason. You want to be accepted as yourself and not as the child of this other person.
Absolutely. It's a really complicated situation. And by the way, I have a lot of sympathy for Jacob because it's harder for a man.
And Sean Lennon, I'm sure,
yes,
had to struggle
difficult.
With all of that as well.
It's very difficult. But it's the same developmental process that any young person goes through, I think, of trying to individuate, trying to separate yourself from your parents, who am I apart from them? But when that parent casts an enormous shadow, then it's more complicated.
Well, you're known as a pretty private person, and yet this book is quite revealing. Mm-hmm. So what made you decide to tell so much, and could you have done it if either of your parents were still alive?
The answer to the last question is no. I don't think I could have, because I was still too connected to them. And what made me decide to do it? I found myself doing it before I decided to do it. Not that it was an unconscious act, but I was writing nonfiction and prose about 10 years ago. I had this little cottage industry of writing essays for different publications. And my editor said to me about one essay I wrote, he said, "That's the beginning of a memoir." And I said, "I'm too young to write a memoir." And he said, "Think about several volumes." So I've been working on it for 10 years.
And that's what a lot of people do.
Yes.
They write my childhood, or sometimes they start in the middle and then go back.
Yeah, my book is definitely not a straight chronological fact check. It's more circular.
There's a whole other factor. Sometimes it's easier to maintain a certain amount of distance when you're telling the story through the written word. But haven't you also done the audio version of this memoir?
Yeah.
Was that difficult at all?
Oh, my gosh. It was so difficult. So much more than I would have thought. I thought, oh, I'm just going to go in and read it. But, of course, you have to re-experience what you've written and all those experiences. It was particularly hard to read the passages about losing my parents, of course.
I've had that situation where I've been able to write about certain personal things, but one day I had to talk about something that touched on me personally on the air, and I burst into tears. Aww. As I was reading it. I sure did not want that to happen, but when you're saying it out loud, there's
difficult.
Something very powerful happening.
Yes, but I bet that moment that you had endeared you to every listener out there.
I hope they didn't even know what was going on. Now, your dad's addiction was pretty much a lifelong struggle, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, there's this kind of mythic tale about him meeting my stepmother and overcoming it, and then everything was fine from then on. That's not true. He struggled.
Well, that's the movie version.
That's the movie version, exactly. He struggled with it his whole life.
Because addiction is something
addiction. That it's definitive.
You have to fight all the time. That's why AA people
That's
keep
right.
on going to meetings 30 and 40 years later.
That's right. Well, as you can imagine, it would have been very difficult for him to go to those kind of meetings.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because when a celebrity goes and says, you know, yeah. "Hi, I'm Johnny Cash and I'm an addict."
Right.
I think that's people will listen a little more carefully than if you say I'm Leonard L.
Right. He has no anonymity. That's the whole thing.
So how is that for you? I've always wondered about when a kid becomes aware of the fact that their parents are really famous. And does that affect the way other kids relate to them?
I think I was aware of it early because my mother was very anxious about it, to be perfectly honest. She was not equipped to deal with fame. It just wasn't part of her makeup to accept this kind of public life, which was one big part of the conflicts between the two of them.
And it's a reason that they got divorced.
I think so. I just don't think my mother could have handled it. You know, the constant absences, the fame, the drugs. It was too much. They were too young.
Well, how old were you when your parents divorced?
Oh, gosh. I was 11.
A lot of people are unable to contain their bitterness when there's a divorce and they dump on their kids. Well, they get their kids involved.
Yeah, that's ugly.
If your dad had only blah, blah, blah.
No, my parents never did that. Neither of them ever spoke badly about the other. Yeah, I have to hand that to them.
And you had a very decent relationship with June Carter Cash.
I did.
And that's always a difficult thing, A step-parent's role is never an easy one because you're not the parent. At the same time, you are the adult.
It's a really complicated relationship, and I've been on both sides of it, actually. And I'm very close to my stepdaughter now, you know, but it was difficult.
Well, did you learn from
having
been on the other side?
Well, not really. It's like once you do it, it's all new. But she and I, my stepmother and I, June and I, navigated it pretty well. And I learned things from her that I didn't from my own mother, and vice versa. So I feel I had these two tremendously strong, influential women in my life.
My guest is Roseanne Cash, and she's written a memoir called Composed. It's published by Viking. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us.
Ago on a cold dark night, there was someone killed neath the town hall light. There were few at the scene, but they all did agree that the slayer who ran looked a lot like me. Judge said, son, what is your alibi? If you were somewhere else, then you won't have to die. I spoke not a word, though it meant my life, for I'd been in the arms of my best friend's wife. She walked these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail.
That's Roseanne Cash singing Long Black Veil. She was on our show back in August to discuss her memoir called Composed. One of the things I asked her was, how many books have you written so far?
I wrote a book of short stories called Bodies of Water and a children's book. And then I edited another book of songwriter's prose. This is my first memoir.
Do you think this book is going to clear up some of the misconceptions? For example, I think a lot of people assume that you grew up in the South.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I grew up in Southern California.
Well, that's the South of sorts.
Very good.
Your family moved there out of Nashville for some reason?
No, we moved from Memphis. My dad was not from Nashville, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when I was 3 years old, we moved from Memphis to California.
Well, it's interesting. Memphis, I've always associated more with blues and
but that's
Nashville
what he came
with
out
country
of.
Music.
Yeah. See, he came out of the rockabilly blues.
Sun Music.
Exactly. Sun Records.
Mm-hmm. Which originally started off as an R&B label.
That's right.
We've had Sam, what's his name?
Sam Cook? No.
The guy.
Oh, Sam Phillips. Sorry.
Sam Phillips. Yeah. He's been on the show, a real character.
He is a character.
But he wound up recording rockabilly totally by accident.
Right, he did. And Elvis, Carl Perkins, Jerry Lee Lewis, they all came out of that arena.
And then you moved here.
Yeah, I've been a New Yorker for 20 years.
Is that simply a matter of preferring New York, or was that connected to family issues?
No. You know that saying, we always thought she was so weird, turns out she's just a New Yorker? That's me. Mm-hmm. I just always belonged here.
Did you visit here when you were a
kid? Oh, many, many times. You know, and another strange thing people probably don't know is that my dad had an apartment at 40 Central Park South for many years.
I know. The only time I ever bumped into him was an odd circumstance for me, because I was going into Bergdorf Goodman, something I never did, but somebody must have given me a gift certificate. And as I was walking in, Johnny Cash was walking out all in black. And I thought, does he buy that stuff at Bergdorf?
Well, he might. He did buy some of it at Bergdorf's. And, you know, I've inherited that love for Bergdorf's.
Did you was it natural for you to think about being a musician because you were growing up in a situation where, I'm assuming, the music business was part of the discussion over the dinner table?
Well, the songs were part of the discussion, and that's what I was drawn to. I thought I might be a songwriter and write for other people. That seemed very honorable to me. I didn't have any desire to be a performer because I just didn't want that much attention, and I didn't want that kind of peripatetic life.
Were you afraid that if you had to put up with all that stress, you might too wind up taking drugs?
Sure. I mean, all of those
things. I mean, your
father
wasn't the only person in the business who had that problem.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not a really accurate kind of leap of, you know, a cognitive leap. But I was just, I had fear about it, mostly from just taking on my mother's anxiety. Well, it turns out that, you know, I grew into life as a performer. I love it. I can balance it with my kids. I say no to long tours. I go out for short periods, and I still get to be a songwriter.
Did you get to perform with your father or collaborate with him on songs?
I did, not very much because I resisted the idea. But, you know, we recorded a song together on my record, Rules of Travel, which came out the year he died.
Mm. What do you think it was about King's Record Shop that made it your first breakthrough album?
There was something about that record. You know, it had four number one singles on it, which was a first for a woman in the industry. It just hit a moment in time, you know. The songs were great. They were rootsy songs and yet really toughened out.
We had Willie Nelson here recently, and he went through this period where I can't remember how many songs he wrote that became hits for him or for other people, but it was just this magical time. Do you think that there are those kinds of magical times where you just are just at the top of your game? And
I do.
Years later, he said, well, he wished he could find out what he was drinking at the time or smoking at the time so he could do it again.
He was probably smoking the same thing he is now.
He didn't reveal that.
No, he probably wouldn't. But yeah, I do think there are zeitgeist moments where you can just plug into it. You know, whatever that is, magic, timing, biorhythms, I don't know.
But you could have just been pigeonholed as another musician.
Yeah.
Was that a fear for you?
I wrote about this in my book, that during King's Record Shop, I had this dream about being an artist that changed my life. And I literally changed my life the moment I had that dream. I realized I had been somewhat of a dilettante with my work, and I really started deepening it.
Because you had to either take it seriously or forget about it.
That's right.
At that point, you were just riding on sheer talent and maybe luck.
Well, success, too. You know, I was riding on a wave of success that I could have ended up doing parodies of myself. But I wanted to find out what the real thing was.
And you've collaborated with both of your husbands.
Yeah.
That can be a positive and a negative.
Yes. And it's a positive now. My husband, John Leventhal, we work together. We write together. It's very romantic.
Mm. Because you can... if you work well with each other, then it's very romantic. If you're constantly arguing over, we really should bring that sound up, or I don't like that lyric, then it can become a real problem.
Yeah, well, I think you have to get past that, not turn everything into pillow talk.
The last album was really, the list, that was cover songs, not your own.
Not my own. The first record I've done that were covers, and... You know, it's from a list of 100 songs that my dad gave me, what he called essential songs, when I was 18 years old. And I saved that list all these years.
There's that old feeling that they just don't write them the way they used to.
Yeah,
think it's true.
Well, you know, I know there are some good songwriters out there now, but these songs are really the American songbook. You know, they are part of who we are. They shouldn't be in a museum. They should be performed.
Do you think country music has gotten short shrift because it often isn't included in the Great American Songbook?
Well, I think it is.
A couple of Hank Williams songs. Maybe.
Sure, Hank Williams, Carter Family. I mean, it's not the Lerner and Lowe songbook, but it is part of the American roots music songbook. I mean, that's what I'm thinking about is roots music. And that includes Southern gospel and Delta and folk songs and protest songs.
And then for a long time, country singers who came out of that tradition complained that they were being ignored by the radio stations that really wanted something that was more like Tin Pan Alley.
Yeah, well, they can't complain about that anymore, can they?
No.
It seems to dominate the airwaves.
And the whole business has changed.
Yeah, its whole business has changed.
So how do you even break out a record these days?
Right. I mean, you know, someone like myself, I'm 55 years old, radio... I don't even think about it anymore. You know,
Please think about radio.
I think about you, Leonard, but not top 40.
And you said that you said earlier you learned a lot from watching your parents' mistakes and in bringing up your own children and developing your own career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I just if there was a choice between a tour and a kid and the kid was going to suffer, the kid came first, you know? It just seems like a natural thing.
But then you've had a rather tumultuous decade. In a short period of time, you experienced the death of your mother and your father.
Yeah.
And then June Carter, your stepsister, and other friends and family. And then you discovered you had polyps on your vocal cords?
Actually, that happened before the deaths. I lost my voice for 2.5 years. And then all of these people died in my family, and then I had brain surgery. I wrote about all of this in the book.
Now, the polyps come from singing incorrectly?
I'm not sure, probably, but I was pregnant and the hormones made them grow like they were in a Petri dish.
Did it change your singing voice at all after the operation?
I didn't have surgery for it.
Oh.
I waited until the hormones went back to normal and they finally went away. My voice was wrecked and I had to rebuild it. It took a year to rebuild it.
Because I don't detect it now.
It's actually stronger now since I've rebuilt it.
What led to the brain surgery? Was it something that came out of nowhere?
Well, I'd had headaches for a long time that kept getting worse. And then a lot of other symptoms came in. And it was a mystery until I was in so much pain that I couldn't really go on anymore. And I had been improperly diagnosed for a decade. And it turns out it was a structural abnormality in my brain. So I got it fixed.
But you said that you are not the same person since your operation.
I don't think so.
Your brain has been rewired.
Yeah, they've rearranged the map of my brain, literally.
How are you different? Because you don't sound like somebody who's had any damage.
No, I'm not different in that way. I'm different in an acute appreciation of things. I know it sounds like a cliche, but also an urgency to do the projects I want to do. And my feeling and understanding of music is slightly different. It's really, it's more subtle. My sensitivity to it is more acute.
So when you wake up in the morning, are you thinking, I'm going to write a song or I better write that essay? I have a deadline?
all of the above. And what's my 11-year-old doing today? Where do I have to take him? And has he had breakfast? And, it's like everybody.
My guest is Roseanne Cash, and she's written a memoir called Composed. It's published by Viking. It's your third book, ascertain?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I want to thank you so much for being with us again. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. And you're looking great,
you know. Thank you, Leonard.
I'd never know that they had done
opened up my head
or any of that stuff.
Thank you, Leonard. It's a pleasure to be here.